insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, let's do this thing. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. We can get you on the air pretty quickly this morning because it's not too busy. People are lining up, and that takes a few minutes. But call that number. We'll get you on the air. It's sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, 888-914-9149. Also, emails, send them to me at patrick@relevantradio.com. Plenty to talk about. First thing, though, Cyrus, I thought I'd mention this to you. You like a good night's sleep just like anybody, don't you?
I require it, yeah.
Kind of a dumb question. Who doesn't like a good night's sleep? And my sleep was interrupted this morning. It was about 4:30. True story. So I'm in a deep slumber, and I'm awoken by the sound of one of our dogs barking. And like barking and barking and barking. Well, that's like a happy to see you bark right there. Maybe that bark might be, I don't know who you are, I'm not so happy to see you. But this bark was like, hey, guess what? I caught an animal. Or guess what? There's something really weird going on. Or guess what? There are burglars breaking into your house. It was that kind of excited, high-pitched, persistent yelping. And this is the bigger male dog. He's a cross between, I think probably a cross between some sort of a Rottweiler and a German Shepherd. Although he looks to me more like a German Shepherd. He's got the markings, the caramel markings and such.
So this is the Patrick, you need to get out here right now, bark.
Yeah, that's, yeah, after about like 3 or 4 minutes, first of all, it woke me up. So it was that loud. And after about 3 or 4 minutes, I'm trying to interpret dog speech, and I only know a few phrases. And this one was one he never really uses, which is, there's something really, really important going on out here. And I thought, okay, he caught a raccoon or who knows what. But he didn't stop. So, okay, it's nighttime. It's raining outside. I don't want to get up and look around, but I do. And I can't see him. So I can hear him. He's like real close to the house, but I can't see him. And I turn on the floodlights and I do everything possible to see this dog. I can't see him. So finally, grudgingly, I said, I got to go out and find out what's going on. So I go out in the rain. And what had happened was we're having some work done on the house, you know, sort of outside the house. And the contractors had sunk these big, deep holes for posts to go in and pillars and such. And they covered it all up nicely with sheeting. And so it's all air or waterproof, knowing that the rain would come last night. And, you know, they're back on the job this morning. But I couldn't see the dog anywhere. Like, where is this dog? I can hear his voice. And I looked down. He had fallen through the plastic. He had walked over one of these big holes and he fell in. And he wasn't hurt. I mean, he wasn't like injured or anything like that, but he was shaken up and he was stuck. I mean, he didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to, he was calling me basically. And so I realized this is going to be a bit of an ordeal here because he's an old dog. His hind legs aren't working so well. He's sitting like waist deep in water. And I think, okay, there's no choice here. I've got to get this dog out of this hole in the mud, in the rain, half asleep. So that's what I did. I finally was able, I had to reach down. Picture
how
this
heavy is this dog?
I would reckon this dog's about 80 pounds, 80, 90 pounds. He's a good sized dog. He's a good sized dog. He's a good dog. His name is Charlie, by the way. And so Charlie is just scared and he doesn't know what's going on. All he knows is he can't get out of this hole. So it's raining. It's muddy. So I have to, the only way I can do this is I have to lay down flat on my belly, prone. I have to reach down into this hole, grasping this wet dog and putting, I put like a leash underneath his front legs, kind of around his chest. And
this explains the smell that is wafting through the studio.
Hey, I have to plead innocent on that because that can't be me. The reason is because when I finally got the dog out, I had to hoist him up and he finally got out and he's like, thank you, master. I could see written all over his face. And so he went off and fell asleep somewhere. So I
fell in another hole.
I hope not. He didn't bark anymore that night. He probably will never go anywhere near that spot next time. But anyway, so yeah, I had to take a nice hot shower, get all the wet dog smell off, and get my clothes into the laundry and all that kind of stuff. So that's how I spent 4:30 to 5 this morning. How about you?
I would have been like, Nancy, the dog needs you.
No. And I was thinking about this. You know, we always, you know, when we talk about things, sometimes you'll bring up, like, is there a God door? And I thought of one. Try this on for size. So all I wanted to do was sleep. All I wanted to do was just not deal with this issue. But I had to, because the dog was in distress and because I wanted to sleep. I didn't want to hear the dog barking endlessly. So the God door for me was where Jesus talks about how the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, referring to keeping holy the Sabbath day. And it just popped into my mind that now I can understand even a little bit better, you know, sleep was made for man, not man for sleep. And so when you like and need a good night's sleep, because you have to get up and do a high-powered radio show for 3 hours the next morning, you want your sleep. But sometimes things supersede that, like getting a poor dog stuck in a flooded hole that he fell into. You just have to do it. And that to me was, I don't know, it just came into my mind, like, you know, that's a way of understanding a little bit better that sometimes you are called upon to take action here and now to take care of something that you'd rather not do, but you have to do it and you need to do it because the alternative is, you know, not acceptable. So from time to time, when we get questions on the program about how do you actually live out this commandment, the church transferred the observance of the commandment from the Sabbath day, which is the seventh day, to the first day of the week, which is Sunday. And yes, the church has that authority. Christ gave the church that authority. Jesus didn't say to transfer it. The church did. But in any case, we worship on Sunday. And just as the Jews of old, who were at the time of Christ, you know, we recognize that we have to avoid unnecessary work. And that's a good rule of thumb. Is this work necessary on Sunday? Do you need to do this work? Mow your lawn or paint your garage door or whatever? If the answer is yes, I absolutely need to, because if I don't, something, you know, really bad could happen, or there's no other time to do it, then you make your decision. And so that for me was a little God door, for what it's worth. And the dog is now dry and happy, roaming free.
Probably sleeping.
Yeah, I don't know if dogs have, you know, what kind of memories they have. Probably pretty distinct memories. But I'm going to keep an eye on Charlie and see if he ever wanders into that area again. I have a feeling he'll probably steer clear of it for the time being. So that's my story. You want to one-up me? You have anything better than that?
I can't one-up it. I like this idea, or I can picture you lying in the mud. It's raining.
In the dark.
Your 80-pound dog is in a hole just big enough for it to fall into. Yeah.
And I have to come into complete body contact with this dog. I have to reach under him and, you know, get this winch, you know, this rope to be able to pull him out, because there's no way he was going to be able to get out on his own. Yeah, I can just imagine you just imagining that sight.
Did you hurt yourself? Are you sore?
No. No, I'm not sore at all.
That's good.
Thankfully, no, nothing like that. I was more concerned for the dog, but he seemed okay. Once he got out, he's, you know, hey, I'm a dog. I'm not bothered by anything.
Got any food?
Yeah, pretty much. So that was my story. 888-914-9149. Sometimes you just have to do what you have to do. You don't want to. It's like changing a tire on the side of the road. Your tire goes out. You don't want to change it. Especially, it seems like in the few times that that's happened to me, I've always been wearing a business suit. Like the last outfit I would ever want to be wearing if I have to change a tire. And yet, that's when the tire blows. You got to change it. All right. Well, we got that out of the way, Cyrus. It's only uphill from here. 888-914-9149. Let's start with Marisol in Albuquerque. Good morning, Marisol. Do you have a little brother named, what's his name? Abraham or something like that? What is your little brother's name?
He's actually my older brother, and his name is Augustine.
Augustine. That's right. Okay. Okay, good. Well, welcome back to the program.
I was wondering if I could have some advice for my First Holy Communion.
Sure, be happy to. Anything in particular?
No. Okay. Like the prayers, like if there's any special prayers.
Yeah. Well, are you talking about like in the time between now and when you make your First Holy Communion, or on that day, or both?
On the day.
Okay. Well, you know what's happening on that day, right? Tell me what you know about the Holy Eucharist.
We're getting it. Yesterday we actually practiced, but we tried the bread, but we didn't try it consecrated.
Yeah, that's right. Because then that would have been your first Holy Communion, right? So your CCD teacher let you taste or eat an unconsecrated host so that you would understand what it would be like on the day you receive Holy Communion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first thing to remember is that the taste and the shape and the texture and the color and all those physical characteristics of the unconsecrated host that you sampled the other day, those will all be the same way when you receive First Holy Communion. So when the host is consecrated, you won't be able to tell the difference with your senses, how it tastes. It won't taste any different. It won't look any different, and so on. But what is different, as you probably have learned, is that Jesus is now truly present under the appearances of bread. And I don't know if you'll receive the precious blood. You might, but even if you don't, it's okay because you receive all of Jesus, body, blood, soul, and divinity, if you receive the host. Or if you were to have a sip of the precious blood, either way, you receive all of Jesus. So that may be the first thing to remember would be to, when you're praying, pray the prayer of faith, from your heart. Lord, I believe that you're really, truly present here. I believe it. I don't see you. I don't see it any different. It doesn't taste any different. But I believe you because you promised and you taught us in John chapter 6 about I am the bread of life. My flesh is real food. My blood is real drink. I'll stop there. Did you have a question?
No. And also our teacher, she told us she's going to have us try unconsecrated wine because she doesn't want us to have it like make a face and act like it was a surprise on our First Holy Communion. And she told us not to make a face because it's the blood of Christ.
So did I understand you correctly that you had like a rehearsal and you received a little bit of regular wine, unconsecrated wine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I could see why.
We're doing that tomorrow, but we've received the unconsecrated bread, though.
Yeah, I think that's good. So sometimes, when a child has never tasted wine before, it just tastes funny to them. So I could see why. When I made my first Holy Communion a long time ago, they didn't give communion under both kinds. Typically, it wasn't very common. So I never had to go through that, but it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Just know that that's what wine tastes like. And then after the consecration, it still has the same taste and such, but it's now the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus. So that's all I wanted to share with you, was just that maybe on the day that you make your first Holy Communion, pray in your heart with love for Jesus. Thank you, Lord, for this beautiful gift. Thank you for feeding me in this special spiritual way, and I have faith that you're really present, even though my senses can't see any difference, they can't taste any difference. I know because you taught that your flesh is real food and your blood is real drink. So that could be a good prayer for you, among all the other things that you'll be praying about. How does that sound?
I think that is good.
Well, I'm glad you do. It's Mighty Soul approved now. That's good. Well, congratulations. It's a big day. And is your family going to do anything special for your first Holy Communion? You're going to go out to a restaurant or have a party at home or something?
We're going to have a party at home.
That's good. That's good. Well, I hope it's a wonderful day for you, filled with lots of graces. It's beautiful that Jesus is going to be present to you in this way. And just remember asking Jesus to always help you to stay close to him. And the older you get, the more you can rely upon His grace to help you stay close to Him. What's that, Marisol?
Okay. And also, it's also going to be my birthday party.
Oh, wow. Kind of a double whammy. So you'll be turning 9, is that right?
Yep.
Happy birthday. So you're going to have a birthday party / first communion party, or maybe the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, good for you. Good. Well, I'm happy for you, and congratulations and happy birthday.
Thank you. Bye, Patrick. Bye, Cyrus.
Bye, Marisol. Oh, I love the calls from the kids. Always interesting questions, that's for sure. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jared now in Orem, Utah. Good morning, Jared. How's your brother doing,
Patrick,
by the
way? How's my brother doing?
The brother of Jared. Oh, just a little inside joke.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. All the Mormons got it. They heard that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, is it Moriantum or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to be LDS, and then I was a Protestant pastor, and then became Catholic.
Wow. That's quite an odyssey.
Christmas
Welcome
Vigil,
home.
So, while I was a pastor, I was bivocational. So my question is, I've been in sales for like 20 years. Got laid off last week, have a couple of job opportunities, one of which, I have some trouble with sales sometimes just being Catholic and some of the dishonesty that happens there. Mm. And the other position is to, even though I'm kind of an older, I'm 41, is to be an apprentice.
That's not older, Jared. Trust me on this. You're a young man. Revel in that for a while.
And become an electrician, and I have that opportunity there. Okay. Which one, I just kind of want your opinion on, being a Catholic provider, being a Catholic man, which way should I go? I'd just like some advice.
Which way, young man? I would look at it a couple of different things. So first of all, you're married, you have some children, are they still at home with you?
I have a 19-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 7-year-old.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's certainly the 7-year-old is going to be with you for a good long time, and you still have some time with the other two. So your budget maybe is going to start shrinking in terms of how much you need to bring in for feeding these hungry kids. But you want to take care of your wife and yourself and have a pleasant place to live and so forth. That's always good. Put some money aside. That's all good. So one question to ask, it seems, would be which career track is more likely to serve that goal? And just looking at that unto itself, all other things aside, I would guess, if I had to, that an electrician would always have work, no matter what the economy is like, because there will always be need for electricians like plumbers and people like that. People who have a skilled trade that they can use will always be in demand. So unless we get off of electricity for some strange reason and nobody has electricity, which I hope and pray doesn't ever happen, sounds like that's a sure bet that if you want steady, regular job opportunities with a skill that most people don't have, that would be a real standout. Now, the sales job, I don't know what you're selling or is it inside sales, outside sales?
Inside.
Okay, so inside sales, like B2B, as they say, are you dealing directly with other companies?
I have a couple of offers on that side. Like I said, I've been doing it for 20 years, both B2B and B2C.
Okay.
So
I'm wondering then, given whatever it is you're selling, and you don't have to tell me, but is it more lucrative in sales? So maybe a little more volatile and uncertain as far as the economy is concerned, but the money is better. Would that be fair or is that? Okay.
Yes, that is fair.
Okay. So, I mean, it's not for me to say, but I would look at those options. And then you mentioned dishonesty in the field of sales. Is that something that you're being asked to do by a boss? You're being asked to do something that you know isn't right? Or is it you see other people doing that stuff?
I just see a lot of it. And I've had to kind of change my ABC from always be closing to always be Catholic.
Right.
Now I'm Catholic, you know?
Yeah, I do.
And it's sometimes you don't get sales because you're not lying, if that makes sense. And so
first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize, you're fired. Always be closing.
Yeah.
You know that line, don't you? Or don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do. 100%. Coffee's for closers.
It's a great, put that coffee down. Okay, I don't want to get in your way, Jared, so we have to take a break here. So how would you, I mean, it's an interesting question. I don't know if I can, I mean, I can't answer it for you, but if you are concerned, if you have qualms about, you know, if you have qualms about, they might ask you to cut corners or be a little quote unquote creative, things like that, then the electrician job, I think, would look better and better.
Yeah.
Because you definitely don't want to cut corners when you're doing electrician's work, right?
Definitely not. No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Could you do both? Could you have one on the side? Could you
dabble? Not really.
No? Okay. It's kind of an all or nothing.
It's kind of an all or nothing.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I'm deciding at the moment. So
I have a feeling you're going to land on your feet. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome, Jared. Good chatting with you, and congratulations on your beautiful family. And I pray God's blessings for you and your family and your job decision. And we'll be right back. Thanks, Jared. Say hi to your brother. Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
The Patrick Madrid Show is the real deal. They got my stamp of approval, baby. Peace out.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right. Different vibe, but I like it. 888-914-9149. We'll go back to the phone. So let's go to Stanley in Huntington Beach, California. Hello, Stanley.
Good morning, Patrick.
Hi.
You know, back in the early 1990s, I bought this tract called Refuting the Attack on Mary by Father Mateo. And I never knew who Father Mateo really is. Was there ever a disclosure as to who he was, is?
No, there wasn't. So I was working at Catholic Answers when that came out. And it was kind of like a like an 8.5 by 11 sized, like a workbook you might, like a kid might have in school. And it was maybe, I don't remember how many pages, 25 pages, 20 pages. It wasn't much, but it was a long essay that appeared originally in Catholic Answers publication, which at that time was called This Rock. And as I remember, it was serialized over two or three issues. And what it was, it was a refutation of something that had been written, I believe, by the Christian Research Journal, a Protestant organization, CRI, the Christian Research Institute. It was started by Walter Martin in the 70s, as I recall. And they had written some, it seemed to us like it was an attack piece on the Blessed Virgin Mary, and that she, and I think part of it had to do with that Greek participle, in Luke chapter 1, kekartomene, which is, we translated as full of grace. And so that article was posted. It was either there, the CRI publication, or there was like a lengthy article or something like that, that a Protestant had written, basically trying to refute the Catholic Answers apologetics answers to typical Protestant questions. That was the genesis of it, as I remember. And so it got a great deal of play when it was serialized. So then it was put into this booklet form, and we sold the heck out of that, and it was very popular. And then eventually it was published in book form. I happen to have a copy of it here in the studio. And so it's not a terribly long book. I mean, it runs to maybe 100 pages maximum, but it's really, really good. And it was a devastating refutation of the refutation that was attempted by the Protestant who wrote that other thing, whatever. I don't remember now who that was. And the reason that the pen name Father Mateo was used, it was requested by this priest, is because he believed, he felt, and I think probably rightly so, that he would be persecuted by either a bishop or a religious superior for doing this. And so he wanted to do it with a pen name. And so that was the pen name, and we never told anybody who it was. I, at one time, did know who it was. I don't remember anymore now. It's been so long. But I knew who the priest was, but very, very few people did. I know Carl Keating knew him, and he mentioned to me who it was. But in the mists of time now, I have forgotten who it was. So he's still anonymous.
Okay, next question is, we went back to CRI and Walter Martin. Then he had a successor, right? Hank,
he
somebody?
Did. Hank Hanegraaff. So I was kind of up close and personal in a limited way in those days. So Walter Martin died suddenly of a heart attack in 1989. And I don't remember when exactly, but I remember it was warm outside, so it might have been summer or maybe early fall. And he just dropped out of a heart attack. I think he was all of 60 years old. And so I had only shortly before that made a visit or two to CRI. I think what happened was that Catholic Answers was still in its infancy as an organization. And compared to CRI, it had a much smaller budget, and it wasn't, you know, didn't have as many resources or employees or things. And so as a gesture of goodwill, the people, and it was Walter Martin, as I recall, and Father Mitch Pacwa was involved because he was a friend of Catholic Answers and he knew Walter Martin. And so one thing led to another, and they formally invited us to come over to CRI. So Carl Keating, myself, and I think maybe Mark Brumley, and I forget if there was anyone else, and spend the day and have a working lunch and get a tour of their place and talk shop. You know, these Catholic apologists talking with Protestant apologists. And that led to, I think, a second visit. And then I had an opportunity to meet Walter Martin, and it was brief. And then, like, the next thing I knew, he died. So there was a jockeying for position. There were several different people who were competing to be his successor. Hank Hanegraaff was the one who won out. He was already on staff. He was like the VP of development or something like that. And I met him back in 89, but we didn't really talk or anything. John Ankerberg has a Protestant TV program. He was jockeying for position. And a few others who what was his name? Another one of these, you know, well-known guys in that world. And Hank Hanegraaff won and became the president. And then he was the head of CRI, still is, but he moved the operation from Southern California to, I think, in the Charlotte area, if I'm not mistaken. And he himself wound up converting to Eastern Orthodoxy. So a whole lot of evangelical Protestants were pretty ticked off with him because, you know, he was no longer an evangelical Protestant. And yet CRI continues. But he's the one who succeeded Dr. Walter Martin, and he's been in that position ever since.
That's amazing about Hank.
I only met him briefly. You know, hello, how do you do? Nothing more than that, really. But he's been able to maintain that operation for a long time. Now, he was an anomaly even in that world as an evangelical Protestant, because he and his wife, whom I never met, but he and his wife had, I think, at a minimum, 8 children. And in the world of evangelicalism, that's very uncommon. It's very, quote-unquote, Catholic to have a lot of kids in the minds of some evangelicals. So for them, that already was kind of weird, because he was against birth control, and he and his wife had a beautiful family of at least 8 children. So I wonder, looking back on it, if some of those might have been precursors to him embracing, at least he got as far as Eastern Orthodoxy, and that's a step in the right direction, that's for sure. But it was a shock to the system for the Protestants, who assumed that he was one of them. But now he believes, of course, in the Eucharist and honoring Our Lady and the sacraments and things like that, which is good. He's not all the way home yet. Who knows? Maybe in due time he'll come into the Catholic Church. But He's done a lot with that organization since then. So maybe I'm rambling, Stanley. I don't mean to. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and thank you for all the time you've given me.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you, Stanley. I have a, now that I think about it, I wrote a book, and it's called Envoy for Christ. I'm just going to pop this out there in case anyone is interested. I wanted to put together kind of like my memoirs, and this is going back some years, but I wrote a book. Well, let me put it this way. I have a book called Envoy for Christ, spelled E-N-V-O-Y, and it is a compilation of quite a few of articles and essays that I've written over the years, some of which were no longer available or accessible because they were not on the internet, or they were published in Protestant publications where I might have been doing a written debate or something like that. So they were no longer available, and I didn't want them to just go away. So the publisher and I worked on this as a kind of a quasi-memoir in the part that I did write. So it's got a lot of these articles, but what I did was I wrote new material explaining like what was going on in the church when I wrote this, what was going on at Catholic Answers when I wrote this, how did I discover Scott Hahn? If you ever talk to Scott Hahn, say, hey, Patrick Madrid said he discovered you, and he'll tell you the same story that I'll tell you. How did Catholic Answers get started? How did, you know, all kinds of things. And I also reflect a little bit on the nature of apologetics and things I learned along the way, lessons learned, that kind of thing. So it's a fairly big book, but it's filled with variety. So it's filled with all kinds of different topics, articles, essays, my own commentary, a lot of inside baseball. I take you inside the early days of Catholic Answers, things that you wouldn't otherwise know about, and I share with you on those things. So if you're interested in apologetics, if you're interested in Catholic Answers, if you're interested in, you know, kind of what was it like all those years ago, as George Harrison would say, this book might be for you. And it just gives a lot of details that you're not going to find in other places. So we'll post a link in case you're interested. But again, the book is called Envoy for Christ, E-N-V-O-Y, 25 Years as a Catholic Apologist. And that was long ago when I put that book together. But I have a feeling, for those of you who are interested in such things, that you'll find that of interest. 888-914-9149. How about Cindy now in Lexington, Kentucky? Good morning, Cindy.
Hey, Patrick.
Hi.
I listened with interest about the gentleman that talked about either being an apprentice electrician or in sales. 44 years ago, I became a journeyman electrician.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And 44 years ago, you didn't see women on the job sites, but I worked my way then into sales, and I've been doing sales now for better of 35 of the years that I've been in the business. Okay. In a heartbeat now, I would go back to the electrical if I wasn't going to be 64 years old and not able to get into crawl spaces and attics the way
I understand.
So
tell me about that. So he may still be listening, that gentleman who called in. You're looking back on it now. He's sort of looking forward. You're looking backward now. And what would be your reasons for opting for the electrician job instead of the sales job?
And it would be that I wouldn't change it in my past life, but if I was younger now, I would change it. And it's because the sales has become so corporate. And it used to be a loyalty, and you had a partnership with your customers, and everybody was at the table to find solutions. Mm-hmm. And anymore, it's more of a finger pointing. This is your problem. You take care of it. It's more like silos.
Right.
You know, this is what I do. This is what you do. Instead of everybody working together. When you're out on a job site now, everybody has to work together.
Yeah. Yeah. And electrician, I mean, the work of an electrician, I'm not an electrician. I hire electricians. Mm-hmm. But that's a very precise, black and white, very, you know, highly regulated industry. So Jared was the gentleman who called in. And he was expressing some qualms about, how did he put it, dishonesty in some of the sales that he was witnessing. And probably, I mean, there could never be any such thing, right, in the world of electrical, because that's so precise, so specific, so well regulated, I would think, right?
Well, the only place you get into something like that is if you're in the office of a contractor and working on job bids and stuff like that, and right. and how you treat, you know, the people who are selling to you, who are right. bringing it to the table. So, but now mm-hmm. out on the job site, I loved being an electrician. I loved the preciseness of it, you know, bending the conduit, the control, the whole nine yards.
See, to me, Oh, go ahead, Cindy. Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, there's so many things, so many ways to go nowadays that, you know, 10 years ago were never heard of, with getting into LEDs and the RGBWs, all the lighting control and stuff like that. It's just, mm-hmm. it's amazing what's opened to somebody who really wants to get into it and learn. They can make a lot of money, make a really good living.
It's true. And there are a lot of young people who now, probably because of the exorbitant cost of tuition or abandoning the idea of going to college, they see their peers and others older than them who graduate from a four-year degree program saddled with huge amounts of debt. And mm-hmm. and a lot of, you know, a lot of young people, I think, were probably very discouraged when it comes to, do I go to college? And I would guess even some of them are thinking, do I even need to go to college anymore? Because does that guarantee me a job? Probably not.
Right.
So you avoid mm-hmm. the debt, and to learn a trade like electrical that you can always be in demand for. I mean, it seems like you've got built-in job security, it seems to me.
You do. And, you know, I crack up when I think about that politician who was talking to Joe the plumber and said, Joe the plumber, there's no way you could make $250,000 a year. Well, I knew Jimmy the electrician, who was a one-man show that was pulling down that much a year. So,
wow.
And yeah. it was his work ethic,
that's,
you know,
shocking,
and going out and getting it done. It's shocking.
Did you ever shock yourself? I've got to take a break. Did you ever zap yourself and say, I'll never touch that wire again?
Not that I'll never touch it. I'm like, thank you, God, for waking me up to pay more attention. So,
well, you know. See, to me, I have a healthy fear of that kind of stuff because I don't know my
That's
way around
thing.
It. If I did, it would be different. But since I don't know my way around it, to me, it's kind of like if you were a herpetologist and you had to handle poisonous snakes. It's like, yeah. I don't want to get bitten.
Keep them.
Exactly. Well, thanks, Cindy.
Exactly.
Thanks so much. Good talking to you. And I'll be back with plenty more ahead right after this. This hour is supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at NotreDameFCU.com/join. That's NotreDameFCU.com/join.
Taco Tuesday! Taco Tuesday!
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
I'm liking the music, Cyrus.
That's a new one. I like it.
It has this South American feel to it. El Condor Pasa.
And just
like
enough
that.
Tacos to make the list.
There's never enough tacos. Can't have enough tacos if you ask me. Muchas enchiladas, everybody. Here's the number to call, 888-914-9149. Let's get over to Albuquerque now and talk to Daniel. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. How are you doing today?
I am doing well, sir. Thank you for asking.
Hey, I just wanted to, you know, I heard the call from the gentleman who was discerning between a sales job and an electrical journeyman job. And
yeah.
I unfortunately got a phone call. I didn't hear the whole conversation, but I also heard the lady call in, and she talked about the choice she would make now. So I'm calling on behalf of honest, good, professional salespeople, mm-hmm. and there are lots of us out there who, you know, I've been in this business for almost 40 years. I started selling in seventh grade, selling yearbook ads. And, you know, I think the cool thing about sales and what people don't realize is, just like electricians, Patrick, as long as we stay a capitalist society, there's going to be need for good salespeople, because nothing happens in a capitalist economy until something gets sold, right? We can't, we're not going to need a lot of products unless somebody has a need for them. And there are professional salespeople that are out there helping people understand their need for it. So,
well, let me, if I can jump in, Daniel, and I hear what you're saying, and I don't disagree with any of it, but maybe, I don't know if his call rubbed you the wrong way or something, but he wasn't trashing the world of sales and salespeople. I didn't pick up on that at all. I certainly don't hold any kind of view that's negative towards sales. He was saying that in whatever industry he's in, that he observed that there's some dishonesty. So clearly that's not universal, as you're pointing out. But I hope you don't feel as though he was like trashing salespeople, because I certainly didn't hear him say that.
Oh, no, I agree with you. And as I said, I didn't get to hear the end of the call. I just did hear the other lady talking about the choice she would make. So I didn't know which way that call ended. And I totally understand. I think it's a personality thing, right? Some people have an affinity for being people and talking to people and doing sales. And some people want order and stability, and they're going to want to do something differently. And, you know, for me, it's always been if you believe in the product you're selling and you would use it yourself, sales isn't that hard, because now it's just about finding people that have a need for your product and helping them see that need and then helping them acquire the product at a good price so that it's actually a positive thing for them.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And everybody finds his or her place, hopefully. Some people are geared for that kind of work, others for sales, others for being a radio host, for example. And there's room for everybody. But I understand what you're saying, Daniel. There are good people who are making an honest living in sales, and I respect that.
Yep, and that was it. I thought I'd give you another perspective. Other than, like I said, I didn't finish the other call, but when I heard the second call, I said, well, come on, guys. You can do well in both. And it sounds like the lady did really well in sales in the electrical world, too.
Yeah. No, I think so. I think she did. But that's where I want to make sure, because I think maybe you misunderstood, through no fault of your own, but I think you misunderstood the vibe. It definitely wasn't anti-sales or anything. She was just expressing her own opinion that, you know, she would prefer to do the electrical work, but, it, you know, to each his own. But salespeople are warmly welcomed here, that's for sure, including you, Daniel, especially you. Thank you. Let's go to Bob now in Michigan. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. I really enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
The other day you presented an answer to one of the call-ins using a triangle. An example as far as God being at the top of the triangle and whatever as far as relating to praying to Mary and the saints. And anyway, I just a simple question. I'm not Catholic and nor am I Protestant, but many years ago in some hard times, I told Jesus I wanted to know him and be what he wanted me to be. And I got baptized, and I walk close with him today, and it changed my life completely back then. But my question is, praying to Mary and praying to the saints, there's hundreds or there's thousands of people probably praying to Mary and to the saints at one time. And, you know, I know God is omnipresent and he can hear us and he's every place. It can be every place at the same time. But how do the saints and Mary receive all these incoming prayers? It's hard for me to fathom that, to understand that.
Yeah, I share your sense of being perplexed. Like, how can this possibly happen? We don't know. A few things I can tell you, though, to as far as biblical answers to this, Bob, would be that number one, Jesus, he tells us in Luke 15, you could begin reading in verse 7, he says that there's great rejoicing in heaven over the repentance of even one sinner. So that little detail I find interesting and enigmatic, because Jesus reduces it just down to one individual person repenting. And as he says, there is great rejoicing in heaven. So somehow the saints in heaven and the angels too are aware of this. But let's take the same conundrum that you raised about thousands. I would argue probably more like hundreds of millions of people, if we have a planet of 7.5 to 8 billion people, roughly, even like 100 million people asking Our Lady to intercede for them is still a minuscule percentage of the total number of people. But it's vast. It's a vast number, 100 million people. So how can that happen? Well, in the same way as Jesus says that those in heaven are aware of and rejoicing over the repentance of even one sinner, all I know is that Jesus said this is true, but he didn't explain to us how it's true. So I don't know the answer to that part of the question, but I accept it on faith because Jesus said it. So I accept on faith the fact that, as St. Paul says in Philippians chapter 3, he says, when we are in heaven, we shall be like him, referring to God. We'll be like him. We won't be God, obviously. We don't become gods. He also says in 1 John chapter 3, in the beginning of the chapter, in verse 2, he says, we are God's children now. What we shall be has not yet been revealed. We do know that we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. So my thought on this is that, in a way analogous to how when you were little, let's say when you were a year old, when we all at one time were a year old, and when you were a year old, Bob, you couldn't do algebra or even add or subtract.
Exactly.
You couldn't do many of the amazing things that you can do now. It was still the same you, but you were not at a point where you could handle those things, much less even understand them, and many other things, no doubt, that you can do. I believe that the jump between our limited abilities when we were little, or even in the womb, for that matter, compared to what we can do now at a later time in life, pale in comparison to the increase in our abilities when we go from this life to the life in heaven. And St. Paul says, eye has not seen, nor has ear heard, nor has it entered into the mind what God has prepared for those who love him. So my thought on this issue is simply that in this world we are limited, and we're certainly nowhere near the capabilities of the saints. And when we get to heaven, we'll understand more clearly why that's the case. But one final thing here is that you're right about God being infinite. He's omnipresent, he's omniscient, he's omnipotent, all-powerful and such. But to hear even 100 million prayers or 100 billion prayers or 100 trillion prayers, it doesn't really matter. The number is still finite. And so when we talk about God's infinitude, that means there's no end to his knowledge. There's no limit to his knowledge or his knowing of things. Whereas in the case of his creatures, like you and me and the Blessed Virgin Mary and any saints who are receiving requests for prayer, we are limited. We are finite. And so no matter how large the number of prayers might be, it's still a finite number. It doesn't entail omniscience. That's another thing to think about, too, just in terms of keeping things in perspective. What do you think about that, Bob?
Well, thank you. You know, yes. Well, and I do understand. I do read the Bible a lot, and I really depend on Jesus getting through days with our various problems that we deal with in life, you know. I now trust him. I trust him with everything, you know. I'm in my 80s, and been down some hard roads in my life back years ago, and that's so when I really did, you know, decide that I wanted to be close to Jesus and follow him, I mean, it changed my life. And I do realize, you know, God says, you know, his thoughts and his ways are above us, and so there, I understand that there's things that I probably will never understand completely clear until I'm home with him, you know. That's how I feel about it. But I do have, you know, I'm not afraid to go to God with questions anymore, because I think he wants me to question him, you know, and things that I don't understand. And you know, that's kind of why I'm why I'm calling you today, you know. I really like your program. I like the way you answer calls and give people, you're a patient man, and you give people time to respond and say what they like to say, and you give very good advice, and I appreciate you.
Thank you very much. Very thoughtful of you to say so. I'm glad to know you're listening, and I would like to just reiterate my invitation that you come home to the Catholic Church. I realize that may seem outlandish perhaps to you. I hope not. But to receive the fullness of that relationship with Jesus that you're yearning for, and I know you, to some extent you already have it, but for example, to be able to see the Lord in the Holy Eucharist at Mass, what a wonderful treasure that is. And I would want that for you. I do want that for you. So thank you for listening. Please do keep listening. And just know that the door to the Catholic Church is always open. We will welcome you with open arms, Bob. Thank you. I'll be right back. Na, 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 na.